Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Welcome to Stone Cold Shows, episode 19 of season 2. I'm Brandon Strange. I'm joined by Charlie Polillo and Josh Jordan. Read Charlie's column weekly on sportsmap.com. Follow him on X at Polillo. Read Josh's work daily on sportsmap.com. Follow him on X at Josh Jordan 975. Charlie, I couldn't help but think about you on Sunday. One of your Polilloisms: momentum lasts until the next game. The Astros got absolutely spanked on Saturday, only to carry a no-hitter into the eighth on Sunday. The Astros have gone 5-5 in their last 10 and now find themselves 9 games out of first as we record this. Besides the Abreu release, the big news over the weekend was Verlander getting scratched from his start with a sore neck. And of course, Orbert making the Mascot Hall of Fame. Somewhere Junction Jack is really plotting his revenge. Hunter Brown has looked excellent over his last several starts. Ronel Blanco has been nothing short of an ace for this team over the season, especially compared to the two guys who are supposed to be the aces in Fromber and Verlander. Charlie, does the success of the two young pitchers give you encouragement that the Astros, should they be able to find their offense and be able to find some sort of consistency with the bats, they can finally take advantage of this week's schedule over the next several weeks? Or are we just in wait and see mode with this Astros team to prove that they are even a good team?
Yeah, I think wait and see is where it's at. I mean, they're team hamster, running on that wheel, but not really getting anywhere. 2 out of 3 over the Tigers was a decent weekend, except really it wasn't. You mentioned the Verlander neck discomfort. That's what we heard about Christian Javier, right? Evidently, with Verlander, it's genuinely just neck discomfort, cross fingers and all that. But when you're taking 2 out of 3 at home against a no better than mediocre Tigers team, while the Mariners are sweeping 3 and while the Twins are sweeping 4, the Astros lost ground on both fronts. Right now, 9 games back of a Mariners team. Imagine if Seattle could hit worth a damn. You know, the Mariners team batting average is .221, and they're running away with the division. What if they add bats? I mean, if their pitching doesn't break down with multiple injuries, it's getting close to going to take a little baseball miracle for the Astros, or Rangers, for that matter, to reel them in. The Twins whipping up with the 4 games they had at home with the A's. The Astros 6.5 games back of the 3rd wild card spot. Right, they're light years behind the Orioles. They're 8.5 games behind the Royals. Then you have the Twins, in addition to the other teams ahead of the Astros in the wild card standings, which is, well, seemingly just about everybody else. The Red Sox and the Rays and the Blue Jays. Still the Tigers. So, no, there's not a whole lot to hang your hat on. But if they're going to mount a legit surge at some point, clearly you're going to need the rotation depth on the big league roster to do it, because Garcia and or McCullers, right, we're still ways away from the All-Star break where there's any chance of either of those guys joining. I mean, if it turns out Verlander has to miss more than the 1 start, that's another serious uh-oh. They started this stretch of 8 out of 9 series against teams with 500 or worse records. So far in this stretch, they're 7-5, which in a vacuum isn't great, but it's solid. Right? It's .583 baseball, 7-5. You go 7-5, 7-5, 7-5 the entire season, you win 94, 95 games. But if the Astros play at that pace the rest of the season, there's basically no chance they're going to make the playoffs. Because if they play at a 95 win pace the rest of the season, they're going to wind up with 85 wins. And, well, the 3rd wild card spot, the Twins, the division, the Mariners, they're both on pace to win 90 at this point. And for the Astros to stay on even a 95-win type pace is ambitious, because they just showed no sustained consistency, right? Their last rock-bottom point of 12 games under 500 was at 12-24. Since then, they're 21-15, which is good, but not special, and absolutely not good enough. It's not where you want to have to hang your hat at this point. If you're the Astros, you're an Astros fan, but there are ample cases in history of teams being this far back or worse, deeper into the season. But since the Astros are getting where they need prescription glasses, if they're farsighted, to see the Mariners atop the standings, 1995, Seattle. The season wound up a little shortened because it was coming off the strike year in 94, so it was 144 games. But August 2nd, the Mariners were 13 games out of first place, and they actually didn't play historically great baseball. The then California Angels collapsed. The Mariners did enough to reel them in, beat them in a one-game playoff to make the playoffs back in 95. You know, famously, the 1951 Giants who won the pennant. They were 12, 13 games out in August, and they played ridiculous ball, 39-6 to end the regular season. I'm generally a never-say-never guy. There's no chance, zero, the Astros winning 39 out of 45 games. But we've talked, you know, repeatedly about the 19 Nationals, 19-30. The Braves in 21 were under 500 in early August, and sometimes Jupiter just aligns with Mars, but there's not a specific path with this Astros club to say, here's why it will or should happen. Sometimes it just does. Not much of a marketing slogan, but maybe that's what the Astros can put on some billboards at the All-Star break. Sometimes it just does.
All right, I'll start with the positivity here. One of the big concerns coming into the season was they can't win games at Minute Maid. The batter's eye is a big problem, and they just can't win there. Well, Astros are 19-19 at home. Can you believe it? They are actually at 500 in their home ballpark. So we can at least get rid of the narrative of that's why it hasn't been going well for them. Is they play better at home than they do on the road, so that's a step in the right direction. I'm with Charlie here. I think we talked about this last week. It's the starting rotation that scares me. And one of the things I brought up was that, you know, Verlander's in his 40s, pitching on 4 days rest over and over again. Is that sustainable? And here he is missing a start with the neck. And then I also brought up Arrigetti. I was like, he's a rookie and he hasn't thrown as many innings as they're going to hope he's going to be able to throw. And we're going to come up on some of those inning caps on him. And then what happens? He gets just absolutely shelled the other day. And that's really all you have are those five guys. So that really concerns me that, I mean, we're only in June and there's a long way to go. And you know, as we mentioned, Garcia, McCullers, who knows with those guys, not a lot on the farm system. Would you even want to sink anything into a trade in a season where it just doesn't look like it's your year? They just seem snake bitten. And that's the other thing that bothers me is it's not just them. Fromber has a couple great starts, and he just goes out and gets shelled against the Giants the other day. Hader comes in the finale, gives up a run. We know Presley's been more down than up most of this year. It seems like they just spring a leak at a different spot. When something else kind of gets fixed, then you look at a different part of the ball club, and that starts going downhill. Jake Myers is coming back down to earth. Chaz McCormick hasn't shown to be what we were hoping he was going to be this year. Singleton's a below average first baseman. Hopefully he plays better, but seems like he's going to get most of the starts, and his track record says we can't really count on that. So, you know, they just seem snake bit. Diaz starts blasting home runs seemingly in every game, and then he hurts his finger and can't play for a few days. It just seems like one of those years for the Astros. I hope they get it going, but it's the pitching that concerns me the most because the hitting's really good. They are fourth in MLB and OPS. So as a team, they're hitting good, but the pitching, the injuries, the inconsistencies, and the back of the bullpen has not been the bill of goods we were sold that, hey, you get to the seventh inning, these games are over. That just really hasn't been the case all season long.
I think within the management structure, you may have a couple of competing viewpoints, and I understand both. Right? Dana Brown was not here for 6 of the 7 years of the run of excellence. So he's not wedded to stuff that predates him. He's not going to wax nostalgic about what happened in 2017 or even 2022. So he probably has a clearer viewpoint of where the Astros are now and where he might like to chart the course. But if you're Jim Crane, upper management, it's been here through all the glory. I think you're naturally loath to let it go and say it's over until it's just irretrievably, irreversibly, indisputably, you're a complete moron if you believe there's any hope otherwise, over. So you want to try to squeeze the last drops of juice from that orange if you think there's anything in there. And, you know, 6.5 out, their outlook is not good, being behind so many other teams in addition to the Twins, but they're not just absolutely a rotting carcass at this point. And as we talked about, I believe last week, you know, we're now inside a month to the All-Star break and a little over a month to the trade deadline. Even if you're thinking, you know, stop being Pollyanna, they have no chance, it's over. Well, you're not going to get appreciably more now if you start selling off what you can than if you give it this next month and see where you're at after this stretch of largely soft opponents. And you have the Rangers as the last series going into the break, at Seattle, the first series out of the break. And if they're 9 games back of the Mariners after that series, it'll mean they've likely already lost the season series. And if you're further than 6.5 games out of the third wild card spot in late July and behind a half a dozen teams and showing no signs of being able to rip off 22 wins in 28 games or something like that, then you sell and you still have a full week's time to choose to sell. But if I were them, even though it feels like you're spitting into the wind right now, I would not let go of that rope just yet.
Josh, you brought up the situation at first, and we'll get more specifically into the Abreu drama later. But in the short term, the Astros have not treated that position as a meritocracy as they've been trying to work through the Abreu situation. And they hope that John Singleton can recapture the pace that he was on when Abreu was in Florida trying to find his swing, where he had raised his OPS to a 787. Admittedly, him hitting 217 is better than what Jose Abreu was doing, but they don't seem interested in playing Joey Loperfido at first. If every game counts right now and they need to play at a voracious pace to get back in this thing, being 9 games out of first right now, how long can they go with first base being an automatic out?
Yeah, you know, it's not as if one spot fixed that and everything falls into place. We should include that the continued absence of Kyle Tucker, another one of the Astros, it's a little deal, really, just a day or two. Day after day after day later, and Kyle Tucker, we still probably won't see him until at least this coming weekend. But the trickle-down effect. I mean, Sunday, they trotted out a 4, 5, and 6 in the lineup of Yiner Diaz, John Singleton, and Jeremy Peña. Credit to Singleton for the little spurt that he had. But, you know, Tony Gwynn didn't hit 330 every week of his career, every month of his career. Great player. Jose Altuve recently concluded the most pitiful month of hitting since 2013. For Jose Altuve, right? The greats are going to have their valleys. Bad players are going to have stretches where, hey, they were good. Body of work. John Singleton's body of work is clear that he is the primary first baseman at this point. It's just sad. And that's not on John Singleton, but he's at one home run in his last 85 at bats. Not hitting 200 over those 85 at-bats, an OPS below 550, you know, worse than what Abreu was last year. But now he's the predominant right first baseman because you see more right-handed starting pitchers than left-handed starting pitchers. Dubon platooning with the way they're doing it makes sense. Dubon's career numbers against lefties are way better. So Dubon should be in there against all lefties at first base. But the refusal to give Loperfido a look, who's 7 years younger, he's more athletic. At this point in their careers, whose resumes would you say has more hope going forward, Loperfido or Singleton? I mean, do we even need to have this conversation? Loperfido is not a great prospect. He was mashing and mashing and mashing, and good for him to at least get his name seriously into the conversation. It should be noted, the Pacific Coast League is a hitter's paradise. So Loperfido's stats, like everyone who plays in that league, pumped up better than they truly are, certainly better than meets the eye. The Astros, fourth in the American League in OPS. The Astros' OPS, if in the PCL, would be next to last. The Sugarland Space Cowboys' OPS is more than 100 points higher than the Astros' team OPS. So either they have it completely backwards and all the Space Cowboys should be hitting for the Astros and all the Astros should be, that's not it. It's an offensive freak show. Ballparks like Albuquerque and Reno and Salt Lake City. But Loperfido, in his little major league taste, with all the strikeouts, still hit better than Singleton could ever dream to hit 333 over a 3 or 4 week stretch. And with Singleton, to hang your hat on things, the power, big, bad, brawny John, right? One home run and 85 at bats. It really is mind boggling that they're going to cast their lot with Singleton. You know, Lo Profito's eligible late this week. If he's not up, I mean, John Singleton, he belongs more DFA'd than he belongs in the lineup regularly against any sort of big league pitching.
There's something about it. They don't want to play Lo Profito at first base yet. They don't think he's ready. And I've questioned, too, that them playing him in the outfield, then the next day at first base, then the outfield, then first base. If you really want to get him ready, you'd be playing him at first base every day. But they're not doing that. And it seems like it'll be maybe Chaz McCormick goes down. He still has some options left. Where it's like, to me, the biggest hole you need to plug is right there at first base. And I just like the grit of Lo Profito, you know, coming up and getting a big hit in a key spot, driving in some runs in front of the hometown crowd. His parents, it didn't seem like the moment was too big for him. He didn't pull his head trying to crank it up into the upper deck. He made good contact and slapped a hard single into the outfield. And he did that pretty regularly in the limited time he had. But there's something about it. They're seeing something at first base they don't like, and they kind of poo-pooed, you know, Yiner playing at first and Caratini also. Like, they brought it up as a possibility, but they just don't seem to want to do it. I don't get it, but there has to be some reason. There must be something they're seeing or hearing from their scouts and other coaches that tell them that's not the best way to go. I just, at some point, what do you have to lose is kind of where I'm going with it.
Precisely. Singleton's defensive metrics are terrible. I mean, eye test, I think he's a little better than he grades out, but his defensive metrics, I mean, the Astros would play Abreu at first base over Singleton. We know Abreu wasn't a quality glove. So whether it's a blind spot or they're just dug in on this for no logical reason, I do want to mention, you know, with Dubon, if he's going to get the playing time against lefties, and that's whether Singleton or Lo Profito is the other side of things, Jeremy Pena is a real problem. Yeah. And it's getting to where bigger picture on Jeremy Pena, right? The super duper star turn postseason 2022. That was not a springboard to greatness in 2023, right? He was pretty much mediocre, actually slipped a little bit and got off to the terrific start this year with the retooled swing and all that. Jeremy Pena's been for hunger for over a month now. Last 20 games, OPS isn't even 400. Last 32 games, OPS is a tick under 500. He walks once per week. He hasn't homered in over 100 at bats. I mean, he's a good glove guy, but he's not Ozzie Smith. If you had a real first base option on a full-time basis, you know, when you're in kind of urgency mode, Dubon should actually be playing more shortstop now, because I don't think it's a big drop-off at short. And Dubon offensively is just vastly outplaying what Jeremy Pena has done for several weeks. And now bigger picture, right? Jeremy Pena, maybe he has another leap in him, but third year, 26 years old, you know, it's getting to where, I don't mean this season or maybe even next season, but Bryce Matthews, Dana Brown's first-round draft pick last year, his first-round pick running the Astros, is tearing it up at high A ball. You know, he's 21 years old. He's not 12. You look at the long list of star players in Major League Baseball, they're getting to the major leagues when they're 21, 22 years old, at least for a crack, if not to tear it up immediately. And that's part of the Astros' problem that Dana Brown's charged with fixing with the overall minor league system. You know, there are guys at AAA, you look at Sugarland's record and go, wow, do the Astros have all these great prospects? They're 45 and 24. The Space Cowboys rule. No, they're just playing a bunch of older guys, 4A guys, you know, Trey Cabbage and Cooper Hummel. And, you know, Lo Profito is 24. Shea Whitcomb's 25. Will Wagner's 24, 25 years old. They don't have any premium prospects there. So if they're going to build up the next generation of really, Jacob Melton is supposedly the Astros' number one prospect right now. He's 23 years old and he's doing okay at AA, you know, not pounding on the door to get to the major leagues. So they have a real talent issue right now in their farm system, and the upcoming draft is another way to improve it. But it's not like you're drafting guys you think can help the 2024 Astros mount a furious finishing kick. There's been talent drain and the brain drain from the front office, talent drain cumulative over time, and their margins have shrunk. So when you lose Tucker for a bit, you lose Fromber for a bit, you lose Verlander for a bit, it's all eroded to where a ball club, which was not close to great last year, so far this season hasn't been close to good. Right there, I think their high water mark of this season is 4-7, three games under 500. It started 0-4. They haven't been closer than that to 500 since 4-7.
Yeah, and the larger sample size we see of Jeremy Pena, he just appears to be a streaky offensive player. And I think it seems evident that they got really fortunate that one of those streaks occurred in the 2022 postseason. Charlie, you mentioned Kyle Tucker. Last update we received on Tucker was that he's walking sand crutches, but they believe he's going to need a rehab start or two before he gets back up to the big club. And that's honestly them getting lucky, in my opinion, just considering the trajectory of the rest of the season and the way all the other dominoes have fallen. The outfield, speaking of that, has been called a logjam, but really only in quantity, not quality. Which would you bet on? Jake Meyers regaining the form that he had for most of this season, or Chaz McCormick regaining the form that he's had over the past two seasons?
Well, Chaz has looked terrible. He's put in a couple swings, but I mean, a three-run homer against a C-level reliever in an 11-2 game doesn't make me scream, "The meatloaf is being served for everybody again." You know, Chaz McCormick's also getting close to 30. It's not like Meyers is a young kid. The overall athleticism, Meyers clearly is the better defender, weak arm aside. But Jake had his hot stretch, like on a relative basis. Singleton had his hot stretch. I'm waffling. Josh, you want to bail me out here?
I'm just going to go off a playoff experience. You know, I haven't seen Jake Meyers take Garrett Cole deep at Yankee Stadium in a playoff game. Of course, the catch Chaz made in the World Series. So I'm just going off playoff experience. I'm grasping at straws here because Jake has shown some good things this year. And Charlie, you're right. I mean, he just keeps making amazing catches in center field. So you're very happy with that. But you want somebody that's going to be another big power stick in this lineup that they can really produce some runs, drive some runs in. So for me, I'll go with Chaz just because I've seen it before in the postseason, but I just kind of want to go back to Pena quickly. The problem with Pena, the power's just not there. That's what you're hoping with him, like him over Dubon, like, oh, Pena's jacked. You know, he's got all this power. He's got five home runs in way less at bats. Dubon has three. So it's not exactly like there's a big difference there. And Dana Brown was asked about this. He was like, do you think your guys get a little too pool happy at Minute Maid Park? And he basically said, yeah, I think maybe there is something to it. And I think with Jeremy, it seemed like he was hitting better when he was more okay with, I'm going to go the other way because their game plan is going to be to just throw sliders at the outside corner over and over again. And every now and then sneak a fastball in there just to kind of keep me off balance. I think Pena's got to go back to that approach. It just, if that's where they're throwing, you hit it to right field, and the porch isn't that deep in right field at Minute Maid. Pena's a strong dude. He can get it out of there. So I'd like to see him doing a little bit more of that, but I get it why people want to see Dubon more, but as good as he's been lately, he hit a lot of balls really hard in San Francisco. He's usually only getting like one hit a game. It's just, but they've been some big hits, and he plays a good defense. So for me, you just got to see the power out of Pena, and it worries you because you saw what he did in that postseason and it was so spectacular. And then we also look at how good Abreu was in that postseason. You don't want to compare those two guys, but it is easy to fall in love with the small sample size. And, you know, on the other side of the coin, how awful Kyle Tucker was in the postseason last year. It just shows you can be one of the best ball players in the league and you can just be lost sometimes for a month at a time at the plate.
Pena swings at way too many pitches. He's back to that. He literally walks once per week. 11 walks drawn this season. If you're not a power hitter, you need to be hitting 320, 330. Dubon is over 300, but Dubon never walks either. It is one of the issues where the Astros' batting average is better than they are in runs scored. They're about 12th in the American League in walks drawn. Altuve has never been a high walk guy, but he's trended up in recent years. Well, he's trended down this season, walking less, striking out a whole lot more. Altuve overall still a very good player, but his OPS is down 100 points from what it was in 2022 and 2023. Yiner Diaz hardly ever walks. Well, the week where you homer in four consecutive games, by all means, swing away. But when you settle back down to norm, you can't have a good on-base percentage if you're walking once every 10 days. While you're batting 260, right? You need more traffic on the bases to get more three-run homers than solo shots, and to get big innings and bunch hits together and guys walking here and there. And too many spots in the Astros lineup, whether it's specifically working a count or chasing out of the zone. They have four or five guys in their lineup who just walk a very, very low percentage of the time.
The problem is you can only play Mauricio Dubon in so many positions. You know, it's like first base has underperformed, so let's play him at first. Pena is struggling, so let's play him at short. Bregman gets hit on the hand, let's play him at third. Altuve needs a day off, let's play him at second. It's great to have a guy who can play all those infield positions, but there's only so many places. You're so spread thin and you have so many needs. Mauricio Dubon, I mean, he's hitting well, but he's not the answer in any one of those positions. He's a answer, but he's just not any long-term answer for any of those positions. What you need is for Jeremy Pena to become a consistent offensive player. What you need is to figure out what your long-term first base answer is. And I just don't know that they're any closer to that. I think what we can all agree on is that Dana Brown is going to have his work cut out for him. And I want to talk to you about his future, because Dana Brown got dropped into what appeared to be a very enviable position in taking the baton on a team that had spent its last 7 years going to the ALCS, if not beyond. But he spent his first couple of seasons now cleaning up messes that were made in the time between James Click's departure and his arrival. Bob Nightingale wrote in his column that Dana Brown's job is safe for now. Charlie, are you surprised that this is even a question right now for Dana Brown?
Well, media has space to fill, whether the ether of the internet or still, I guess, in some forms, hard copy of newspapers. When a team is grossly underachieved or just isn't good enough anymore to achieve at the high levels we've seen over the last 7 years, the name game is going to play, rumor, gossip. It's natural for fans to call for change, trade this guy, fire that guy. That Dana Brown right now should be in trouble, I would find absurd. It would be scapegoating, just as if you think the Astros' plight so far in 2024 on game day, it's as much or more about Joe Espada as player performance. Right? Dana Brown took over a team that probably had peaked. Right? They were at the peak. They just won the World Series. And last season came very close to getting back, but we're not close to the quality of ball club in 2022. And eras wind down. Right? They're carrying the biggest payroll they've ever had this year. It's not Dana Brown's roster construction that has them in this place. It's not several years of a minor league system in decline and decay for various factors, not just ineptitude, but it is what it is. Dana Brown can't snap his fingers and whip an entire farm system into shape. Right? He's been here under a season and a half. Year one, you'd have to call a success. They did win the division, did go to game seven of the ALCS. This year so far, debacle. But you can't hit the lottery every year. You can't win a race every year. But I guess if you're the jockey on the horse that pulls up lame or just fades in the stretch, or maybe this year actually isn't even alive in the stretch, but it's year two. The early returns, and it's all speculative because none of those guys are in the major leagues yet, but the early returns on Dana Brown's first draft class here show some promise. Second draft class upcoming at the All-Star break. That's the most critical part of Dana Brown's job to this point, because Dana Brown's not going to decide whether you're going to pay Kyle Tucker. I think fait accompli, they're not going to pay Framber Valdez with an extension. And the general manager major league roster decisions, will we have further clarity on who actually holds the hammer on making some of those? Over the next year and a half, they get out of the Abreu money, they get out of the Montero money. What are they going to do if they don't pay Tucker with all that money? If Jim Crane doesn't think that Dana Brown's the right guy to make those type of decisions and pursuing major league talent, well, then maybe by this time next year, Dana Brown's in real trouble. But I don't care if the Astros finish 71 and 91 this season. I don't think Dana Brown's head should be on the chopping block for it.
I don't think it should either. I think he's done an okay job, not a great job, just from what I've seen. And a lot of that, we don't know exactly who has what power in the organization. The one thing that we all hope, right, is that Crane's going to listen to Dana Brown a little more, listen to your general manager, a real baseball guy, not just retired players. Maybe the Abreu contract, the Montero contract kind of woke him up. Like, maybe we don't go down that road again. But I mean, I look at how they handled the Abreu thing, and when they talked about moving on from Abreu, Dana basically said he kind of led the charge on that. He let Jim Crane know what he was thinking, and they made the move. But I wouldn't want to be owning up to that. This is a quote from The Athletic about Dana talking about Abreu. We ultimately had a timeline. We just didn't know when the timeline was. A big part of it is when you set a timeline, you say, we want to see better at bats, and those better at bats should come in this time period. All that doesn't even make any sense right there. We had a timeline, but we didn't know when it was. And then what did you do with Abreu? You sent him basically for a week's vacation, and then he played five games at the Florida Complex League, didn't do all that well. He only had multiple hits in one game in the lowest level of professional baseball. And then he goes hitless in two games in AAA, and then you bring him back up to face the Mariners pitching staff in a crucial series? That makes zero sense to me. I'm just like, if you really wanted him to try and find it, don't you think it'd take more than seven games? If the guy was hitting under 100 when you sent him down, I don't understand. I guess maybe Abreu only agreed to 3 weeks, and that's what it was. But if I'm the Astros, I'm looking at the calendar going like, I don't want to have to bring this guy back up to face the Mariners in this critical series with their dominant right-handed pitching staff. Doesn't make sense. And if you really wanted to give Abreu a chance to get out of it, he needs to play a few weeks in double A, triple A, and see what happens, get some kind of real sample size. But they didn't do that. So, you know, I think Dana's job's safe. He still has two more years on his contract. I don't think Jim Crane's looking to end any more contracts early right now after what he's having to pay Abreu and some other guys. So, yeah, I think Dana's going to stick around. You know, Espada is the one I think has caught even more heat than Dana. So yeah, we'll see what happens there. But I just think the whole way they handled the Abreu thing, I guess they're all going to point the finger at somebody else. And at the end of the day, they basically lied to us. They told us they were seeing better at bats in the minors and they could see a difference in his timing. And then they're telling us, oh, yeah, we took a look at it and it wasn't getting any better and we had to get rid of the player. So I get it. You have to lie a little bit in sports, but you could just be an average baseball fan and see that Abreu is just not the player he used to be. And it was time to move on.
Or in the rookie league stuff, the old George Costanza line on Seinfeld, you can Google it, younger people. It's not a lie if you believe it. And they were so desperate to try to get some return on investment that they need to send not Bagwell, but who was the Fountain of Youth guy? Ponce de Leon?
Yeah, I think it was Ponce.
Yeah, and you know, the well was dry on Abreu. So getting into the major leagues, and we discussed it at the time, the Seattle series, that was somewhere between odd and ridiculous, but was almost a sense of, okay, let's get this over with. Get him in there where he can't really be expected to hit. He won't hit, and then finally we can cut the cord. And the one on Dana Brown I want to mention, we're not sure the blend. You know, Dana Brown aggressively said, go to 5 years, $95 million on Josh Hader. Then that one is on him, though, again, financial decision on that level. It didn't happen without Jim Crane's approval.
Yeah, it's true. And look, everything we've heard on the Abreu situation was that it was out of Joe Espada's hands. That also begs the question, then, how much was it in Dana Brown's hands? We'll probably never know. I assume he had a voice in the room, but I can't imagine he had the voice in the room, because I think ultimately that was a decision that was made by Crane and Bagwell to sign him initially. And then I think to cut bait, to eat $30 million, that has to be ultimately like Crane decision. Again, we don't know, and we'll never know how much responsibility lied where. To Dana Brown's credit, he did sign Victor Caratini, which has been a very important addition given Diaz's offensive struggles and then health. Ronald Blanco, moving him to a starter role, seemed to be his decision as well. That has worked out amazingly well for the Astros to this point. Trey Cabbage was just a guy. I mean, I don't think anyone expected much out of him, and he's just been okay.
It was a lotto ticket.
Yeah. Yeah. But at this point, you need warm bodies. So you'll take it. We don't know how much of his press conferences and the double talk was him carrying water for decisions that he had little to no part in. Doesn't matter. Here's where we're at. We're looking at this team right now. They're nine back. We'll know a little bit more about what this team is after they get through this schedule, where they're facing the White Sox, then they got the Orioles, then the Rockies, Mets, Blue Jays, Twins, Marlins. And that comes before their big series against the Rangers and Mariners. So that run,
That's the season.
Yeah. I mean, that this does look like the season. We're talking about Dana Brown and how can he affect change on this team right now? Should they be entertaining trades?
Well, I think, and this is a fair criticism of Dana Brown, hindsight, real world, however you want to look at it, but he was insufficiently aggressive in adding one more arm capable of eating some innings at the major league level. I understood the hedge on that. We'll see if we're able to dog paddle along and waiting on Garcia, and we're paying McCullers $17 million, and you know we want to add a Jake Odorizzi type. But the bottom line is they counted on guys to stay healthy and or pitch better than they have, and it's helped get them to where they are. You know, on the schedule, 15-9 is not a Herculean stretch of baseball. That's 625 baseball, which over a full season wins you 101 games. But again, 1 month, not quite 1 month worth of baseball going 15-9, extremely doable against the schedule the Astros have to the All-Star break. Well, that would get them to 500 at the break. And if they're at 48-48 at the break, now they might still be nine games or worse behind Seattle, but there's no way they're out of the wild card race completely if they're at 500 at the All-Star break. So that might be one reasonable milestone I put out there. Milestone before those are saying, no, go straight to the tombstone.
Yeah, I want to play the waiting game here a little bit. I want to see what they look like. We know the system. They don't have a lot of prospects that they need to be parting ways with. They need to stock that thing up. So you don't want to trade the future if this team really isn't capable of making the playoffs. But as we pointed out, you know, who knows with Arrigetti? He's a rookie. Verlander's getting older. They're going to need more arms. There's no doubt about that. I just, you know, at what point do you just kind of be like, we are what we are? And, you know, talking about Dana Brown, the JP France thing, you know, I know we weren't expecting a ton out of him, even though he was really good last year. But, you know, he had the arm issues early in spring training and he ended up, you know, getting through it. But then we haven't even heard that he's picking up a baseball anymore. So it's just all their depth is gone. So I just want to see as we get closer to the All-Star break is, like we said, this is the season right here. Let's see how they get through this stretch of games. And if it's looking like they have a chance to make a move, then yeah, I'm fine with a back end of the rotation type starter as long as you don't have to give up too much. I think that's what they need. Dana said a bat too. And I mean, if Jake Myers and Chaz and Singleton and Dubon are still really not getting it done and Pena is still scuffling, but they're somehow in it, then yeah, maybe you go get a bat. I'd be okay with that. But it's just, if the season looks like it's already not going to work out, then sometimes you just got to be wise. And sometimes it's not your year. And sometimes it's not your fault. Guys get injured, bad luck, you know, things happen. Guys get old, what have you. So sometimes you just, you know, need to take a step back and be like, all right, well, we'll get them next year. Hopefully we're not to that point, but we're going to know that here in a few weeks.
And on the starting pitchers, you know, the Angels move Tyler Anderson, the White Sox, Garrett Crochet or Eric Fetty. Dana Brown should be in on those conversations. The problem is several contenders, a number of them much better positioned right now than the Astros in the standings, have way better farm systems. So anyone who wants to come in over the top of any Astros offer can do so. The Astros, they have a serious lack of premium prospects. They don't have anyone who you'd say, wow, that's what Jackson Merrill was with the Padres, having a terrific rookie season for them at 21. You know, what the Orioles still expect Jackson Holliday to be, or 2 years ago what Gunnar Henderson was before he got to the majors. The Astros have none of that. Now, maybe one of those guys will explode. Maybe Bryce Matthews becomes a future star. But he's not an elite prospect. But in the Astros system, Bryce Matthews, a 20-year-old outfielder named Luis Baez, who's also putting up numbers on the same low A-ball or high A-ball team where Matthews is, those kind of guys, untouchable. Maybe they'd view Melton that way, you know, if you're looking to rent a pitcher. But all your Shea Whitcombs and Will Wagners and Jesus Bastidas, they're not quality as prospects. So you're not going to get a legit major league back-of-the-rotation guy, much less a number three type starter, with what the Astros have to offer relative to what the Dodgers or the Orioles or drop down to the Rangers or the Guardians could put in play. So sometimes it's just no longer your time.
One of the questionable quotes Dana Brown said in that Abreu presser, he was asked about it. He said there were no lessons to be learned from the Jose Abreu situation. But there sure seems to be, despite Bagwell telling Brian McTaggart that the scouting and analytics department was in favor of the Abreu signing, there's no way, in my estimation, that the analytics department was on board with a three-year deal, which a two-year deal does not make Jose Abreu play any better, but it does keep you from eating a full $30 million, gives you more flexibility under the CBT. So maybe there were no lessons for Dana Brown, but does the Abreu outcome influence Jim Crane going forward and signing off on future free agent contracts?
35-year-old players, yes. And Abreu, when he finished up with the White Sox, he was coming off a 307 season, but his power disappeared. Right? He hit one home run his last 55 games with the White Sox at 35 years old. That was a real warning sign. And I mean, as recently as what, 3 weeks ago, he still has the bat speed. Bat speed's useless if you can't make bat hit ball. It was a three-year deal. I mean, what are the Padres thinking right now about the Xander Bogaerts 11-year contract they gave him? So it wasn't a long-term debilitating deal. Yuli Gurriel was washed up, and I know the Pineapple will always have his adorers, and should. But replacing Yuli with Abreu on paper was an absolute upgrade. But that's why you go play on the field and, you know, fantasy leagues and simulation games that are played on paper or on computers anyway. And Abreu just failed. You mentioned, Brandon, going to the third year. That was illogical. No one else was willing to go there. The Astros felt, okay, it'll close the deal. And you know what? We're the Houston freaking Astros. It's going to work because we're the Houston freaking Astros. So I'm not going to say hubris got them on that transaction. But if they needed a little reminder that they're not bulletproof and they're capable of some big gaffes, they got one. Not tragic.
The Astros have found value in older players for many years. You know, Verlander was one of them when they originally brought him over, and that worked out. And, you know, to some extent, Michael Brantley. Now, Brantley was 32 the first year he joined the Astros. He wasn't 35. But then they decided to go ahead and give him another year at age 36, and that didn't work out either. So, yeah, I'm thinking with some of these older players that they should learn their lessons here. Sometimes you can find great value. You know, it's true. But you always have that injury risk. And even with Verlander, you know, he tore his Tommy John, and you lost years and money with him, even though he was great for you, helped you win a couple World Series. There were also some down years there with an older player. So, hopefully they move on from that, but there's got to be a lot of lessons learned that Dana Brown's just walking that high wire. He doesn't want to say anything to upset Jim Crane or Jeff Bagwell or anybody. You know, he's just going to say, hey, sometimes, you know, free agent contracts work out. Sometimes they don't. If I'm in that building, yeah, I'm not going after the 35-year-old guys anymore. And, you know, they just paid Altuve a lot of money for a lot of years, and he's no spring chicken, but he's arguably the best player in your franchise history, and they want him to stay with the Astros. I think that's kind of a different conversation with him.
Charlie, you mentioned length of contract also being a deterrent. How does this influence their thought process on Tucker and giving him a long-term deal, paying him into his late 30s?
Look, if Kyle Tucker's insistent upon a 10-year deal, effective when he can become a free agent, I'm not in a rush to do that. And Kyle Tucker's been a terrific player over the last 3 years. He's not Aaron Judge. In the batter's box, I know he's been better than Yordan so far this season, but overall, he's not Yordan Alvarez. A 10-year contract for a guy who part of his game, you know, not that he's a burner, but best base runner on the Astros for my money, best percentage base dealer, fabulous, something like 92-13 in his career. When he gets to his mid-30s, Kyle Tucker loses a step in the outfield on the bases. I think it hurts his game more than it does a guy like Yordan Alvarez. But if you were to do, right, they control Tucker for next year, his age 28 season. You did 7 years on top of that. So an 8-year contract takes him through his age 35 season. Younger than when you gave Abreu 3 years. Altuve, and Josh nailed it, he's a special case. If Altuve is a big sunk cost on the back end, which is a real good bet, right? They de-escalated the cash on the barrelhead, but Altuve's counting 25 years toward the tax when he's 39 years old, right? There's already this season. It's just the first half of the season. Maybe he goes bonkers the second half, but Altuve's shown a little decline this year. though props to him, he's yet to commit an error at second base so far this season. So, you know, you have to weigh the age, right? Kyle Tucker's in the heart of his prime. If you give Kyle Tucker 7 years now, you are getting to eat the entirety of the prime of his career. And if you sacrifice a little on the back end there, so be it, right? Altuve, they sign him later in his career to that lost leader phase of his career in all likelihood. But Altuve, at ages 32 and 33, is coming off having put huge seasons on the board, albeit injury ravaged a couple of years ago. But he is, you know, Jose Altuve is one of one in terms of a contract negotiation for the Astros. But if you're a large market, right, and the Astros don't have Yankee Dodger money, but they're there with just about everybody else and ahead of most of the others, if you're not willing to pay up for a 27-year-old star in his prime, what are you doing?
Yeah, it made me feel less confident when Dana said, oh, I'm sure Tucker's agent's going to want 10 years. And I almost feel like Bregman's kind of an afterthought now. I don't even think we even consider him being back next year. We're already talking about Tucker. But I will say this, Dana was quoted about older players. He said, I'm not the type of guy that's going to be in the habit of signing a lot of older guys. I think sometimes you have to sign older guys, particularly when you have an opening and you have to plug that opening. You may have to do it. I think the older they get, you should try to get less years. No way. I wonder what he's saying there. You know, anyway, so Dana doesn't want to do that, but sometimes you have to. It makes sense. But I'm getting a little more concerned about the Tucker thing. This doesn't look good when he's like, I think we're going to eventually try and get together and make an offer, but they're going to probably want 10 years. That doesn't look good.
I mean, their ideal, frankly, is over the next season and a half, Jacob Melton becomes Kyle Tucker. I mentioned Baez, 20 years old, that when he's 22 going into 2026, hey, there's two-thirds of your outfield and Jake Myers, Chaz McCormick, someone else is the third guy, and you save $250 million that you didn't have to pay Kyle Tucker.
Yeah, and look at George Springer. He last time we checked, he was hitting under 200. So these things can go poorly. Loperfido could maybe be an option for you too. Who knows? And Pedro Leon's actually been playing this year, even though he's getting a little bit older for a minor league player.
Yes, it'd be nice if we could see what Pedro Leon looked like at the big league club. Again, it just depends, because I don't see how they're going to treat any other position differently than how they've treated first base. And granted, I also understand, Sue, you're not going to expect a rook to come up from AAA and save your season, but you need something. Again, Dana Brown is not in an enviable position now. He's got a lot of mess to clean up. He's got a lot of things to fix. The trade deadline will be one of our first real indications of what Dana Brown's capable of, and then an offseason of possibilities. We'll end it there. That's going to be it for this episode of Stone Cold Shrizz. If you listen on podcast and you enjoy the show, please consider giving us a 5-star rating. Charlie, Josh, and I will catch you next week, but you don't have to wait that long to get your Houston sports fix. You guys know, because all you have to do is subscribe to Sports Map Houston and Sports Map Texans on YouTube, and we'll have more content for you during the week. And until next time, go Stros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's Essential Prenatal Multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.